Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, buckle up, let's ride.
You added a buckle up to the intro.
Let's glide.
Let's glide, he says.
Let's fly.
How many variations of this are you going to have?
Do you want to know?
I don't. I imagine I'm going to find out as these episodes of the Dunker Spot continue to rack up. So
you're right.
Unbelievable. Are you enjoying the extra hour of sleep?
Yeah. I mean, you really don't know unless you like have an oven or a microwave. I mean, let's just be honest.
I feel that. Well, we were recording early on the Monday before this slate that features 15 NBA games. So all stats and references will be through games played on Sunday. Also, happy holidays to all the college basketball fans that are listeners of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed this season. Let's get into some news items before we get into our weekly observations. First, on the WNBA side, Latricia Trammell, former LA Sparks assistant, has been hired as the Dallas Wings head coach. What was your initial reaction when that news came through the pipeline? How do you feel about the fit?
I think it's solid. I think obviously with her coaching acumen, being a finalist beforehand, and her ability to display the skill set, the play calls, I think that will help with the Wings issues a little bit. So I'm looking forward to see what happens offensively, to see if there's a better blend for them. Obviously, we got to see what they come back with, but I'm all for someone finally getting their shot. And, you know, she's worked, she's put the work in, a lot of different stops. So, you know, that first head coaching job at that level usually hits a little different. So we'll see what it looks like.
I am excited. You mentioned the offense, which the Wings certainly have to figure out what their purpose is on that end. I am curious to see what her imprint on defense will be. I think a lot of that is going to be dictated upon like who's coming back. Again, we had the report from Christina Williams earlier this year with Alicia Gray reportedly being on the market, maybe not coming back to Dallas. We'll see if that holds, if the playoff push / first round showing changes her mind or changes the Wings minds in any way. But I'm curious to see what they do with the big room and just what they do defensively, because I think if they have that kind of foundation, it gives you more of a margin for error on the offensive end as they try to figure out, okay, what does this backcourt look like going forward? What is the hierarchy with what we saw in the second half of the season from Tierra McCowan? How much will she be featured? How will, if she is featured much, like what does that inclusion do scheme-wise on both ends of the floor? I remain endlessly intrigued with the Dallas Wings. A lot going on there, but congratulations to Latricia Trammell for getting her shot. We will see how it goes. To the NBA side, where do you want to start? Do we want to go injury news, or do we want to go with the big boom that we did not get to talk about on on Friday?
I mean, considering you put a whole excellently done disclaimer out there, let's go ahead and do the thing.
Let's do the thing indeed. Nets guard Kyrie Irving has been suspended at least 5 games from the Brooklyn Nets following the fallout with the link that he posted on his social media. First reported by Vincent Goodwill of Yahoo Sports, the Nets have kind of released, or leaked rather, the action items that will be required for Kyrie to make his return to the team. That includes a public apology, a $500,000 donation, meeting with Jewish leaders, a meeting with Joe Tsai, kind of showing that he is actually sorry and has learned, and these type of actions won't be repeated again. I guess, this has been such a long, drawn-out situation, for one. But beyond that, I guess I'll pose this to you. Like, do you feel like those steps, do you think Kyrie will take those steps?
I mean, it's going to be up to him. I don't know. the fact that there's that many steps leads me to believe that someone thinks it may not all be accomplished. That is a gauntlet of terms. And it circles back to, I think we had a discussion when we were talking about Draymond. We never really know all of the consequences of things. Like, this is laid out in front of us. But there are consequences all over the place that we never know about. And I circle back to the, and it's just weird because the conversation started there, but I'm keeping it right here. I go back to, clearly, the person at top was trying to handle this scenario. And it appears there was a little bit more pressure than maybe we had believed or had known about. And nothing occurred. No replies. So one of those steps being, hey, we have to have a chat, speaks volumes. Because a lot of these are action items. That one is subjective. And I don't know how that's going to go. I don't know if he's, when he's meeting with Adam Silver, I don't know what's happening. But it's a larger deal where, like, moving away from just the horrific nature and the impact that that had on people, which should not have happened, and I condemn, you can't just not talk to someone that's trying to give you an opportunity to do a thing and then just not do the thing as well. Like, defiance needs to be used at the right time in the right place. But I think that's kind of like in, you get around, I go back to when he said, I have a whole army with me. And it's like, do you though? Like, we look around and we feel like there's all this support and you can find whatever content or belief you want, but who's gonna go with you when the consequences come for your actions? That's your army. And we just need more people in our lives to hold us accountable. And we need to hold ourselves accountable. And you gotta be responsible with what you say when you say it and recognize the impact it can have on others. Like, those are all just basic steps we can take to be better. So I'm kind of all over the place a little bit, but like, I don't know, man.
No, it's fair. Like, this is a lot. And I wonder, because the act / the link itself, and then the lack of communication beyond that, and also like the practice scrums that made the situation worse from an optic standpoint, among other things, like, there's just a lot going on. I do also wonder, like, how much of this is, it's trying to figure out how to word this, like, how much of it is just this situation and how much of it is this situation plus everything that's kind of happened over the last year and a half. Like, I wonder how much that also factors into, no, you need to make this right or we are done.
Oh, I mean, that's probably why that's in there, honestly. But, you know, that's neither, like, I just, it's a lot. It's a lot to try and process. And, you know, I kind of like, this is my other thing, and I'm just bouncing away from this. How do we deal with like the rush for conclusions so quickly? Like, I get it when these bad things occur, but how do we handle the rush for things to happen? Because everything that people said didn't happen eventually ended up happening. How do we balance that?
That I'm not sure of, to be frank with you. And I think the other thing that I wonder about is because this, like, just anti-Semitism in general, since that's such a...
Oh, no, it's a tricky conversation, like, because that warrants energy. So I'm not saying it doesn't. I'm just curious.
No, I understand. I guess for me, I'm just wondering, like, Kyrie was punished because the link that he shared contained anti-Semitic content. And that deserved to be called out. And he deserved to be called out for that. I guess for me, because there has been so much debate surrounding what he posted, and again, like, I think it's wrong. But I wonder, on one hand, like, him posting that had a lot of negative impact for very, or what should be, obvious reasons. Beyond that, because there seems to be such pushback to it, I wonder if having the action items reported on or leaked, like, if that hurts in the collective effort to make it further known why this was wrong, if that makes sense.
I hear what you're saying. Mm. I don't know what to do with any of this.
Well, I think that's fair. Like, again, I'm trying to work through it myself. And this is, it ultimately, like, I mean, I wasn't the one that did it. So, I mean, there's a line there. But, like, because I see the fallout. And then to see other people speaking out on the fallout. Like, I just worry that it's becoming yet another, we're going to yell on this side, and the original message is kind of being lost in all of this. And I don't think that helps anyone. So I'm not sure where to go with it either. We will leave it there. I'm sure we will get more as this goes on. We'll see what Kyrie commits to doing or not doing, and we'll just flow from there. On the injury front, just some quick notes before we move into our impressions of the week. Pacers guard Chris Duarte suffered a right ankle sprain. He is out 4 to 6 weeks. I would imagine that opens up even more of a runway for Benedict Mathurin. Do you have any thoughts beyond that in regards to that?
Oh, I mean, it's a bummer for Chris Duarte. I mean, especially in your second year, opportunity to play and grow. I think it's definitely going to be even more Benedict Mathurin time. And some more good reps for him, but hopefully Duarte can get healthy and get back to business.
There we go. On the Suns side, who continues the role of Cam Johnson, suffered a torn meniscus. He's going to have surgery. He is out indefinitely. How do you see the Suns is dealing with his absence in addition to Jay Crowder just not being there? Like, are there any not easy tweaks? Not the best way to phrase that, but, like, how do you see them trying to adjust for his absence?
For Cam?
Yeah.
I mean, that's another bummer. Specifically for him, because he was finding a stride. He really had the runway playing time-wise, and he's a big piece of what Phoenix needs to get to. These are great reps. It stinks. The answer is right in front of you, guys.
Oh?
There's someone in Phoenix who's been telling y'all for the last 3 months that he's ready. Boss Man 100, Torrey Craig.
It's a good shot.
He has been literally, watch this man play. He's been like, no, I can do that. I promise you I can do that. So you're now we'll get to see if he can do it. And then I think that kind of slides Josh Okogie into that. I can play defense, bench role. Mm-hmm. Need some size, need some effort. I can do that. So it'll be interesting to see if Torrey Craig can kind of give him some of that value, or do they think, hey, we need to go grab something else as well? Maybe they get a little mellow out there in the desert.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, there is a void for shooting at the four spot that he could probably field in the short term. I'm really curious about this one, because as you said, like, Cam had the runway cleared. Like, Cam getting the runway cleared, reportedly, allegedly, maybe, was part of the reason why Phoenix was okay, or Jay Crowder was like, all right, I think I want to go somewhere else. And so now that you're without both of them, like, this is such a, or this can be such a hit for Phoenix. One, Cam Johnson is just good, but even the skill set that he provides, not just shooting, but the movement shooting, some of the secondary creation against tilted defenses. They needed all of that stuff. And you remove that out, you get that out the window. Like, if Jay Crowder isn't there, you can talk yourself into, okay, Cam isn't the defender that Jay Crowder is, but because of what he provides offensively, what he provides as a spacer, as a movement guy, and as a guy that can get downhill, like you can get the benefit is there. You may lose a little bit on defense, but the offensive boost is going to be enough to overcome that. You take this out, like there isn't another player on the roster like Cam Johnson. Like even Torrey Craig would be in the Jay Crowder mold, though Crowder obviously a more willing and a better shooter. But you could at least say, okay, no Crowder, Craig can feel some of what Crowder does. With Cam Johnson, like the other movement shooter on the roster is Landry Shamet. He doesn't have that size. Doesn't have the size that Cam Johnson does. They don't play the same position. And so I do wonder, like you floated the Melo thing, but like I do wonder if this is what spurns Phoenix to make a move, period. Whether it's signing someone, whether it's, okay, we have to get something done with Jay just so we can get another rotation player in the building or what. Like I think if there's going to be something that spurns them to actually make a transaction, like this, I think this injury is the one.
You know, in my head, I don't know that they make a move unless one is apparent to them. Like a really, really good upgrade. Because to your point, yeah, they're completely different players, but Phoenix did have a lot of success with Jay Crowder. So they could just say, okay, we can't do the Cam Johnson stuff with the first unit anymore. Let's just do the stuff that worked before and hope Torrey Craig can give us just enough. I mean, second unit wise, they've been playing Landale and Saric together anyways. So it's like, okay, let's just try and figure it out.
I can see that.
I just don't know if they make a big move. They're winning. They have had success. They believe in Damian Lee too. So, you know.
Also true.
They may just look at their guys and be like, all right, next man up. See what we got.
And to that point, like that's also why you make the signings that Phoenix made over the offseason. Sign instead of trade to get some vets that are more plug and play. Like Damian Lee was what, the 10th man in Golden State, 11th man, but can get in. Like, all right, I can get downhill. I can score in a punch. And we saw that specifically in the first half of last season. The second half, we don't need to talk about it. But he's shown that he can feel that void on occasion and feel those minutes. Josh Okogie, again, very specialized player, one of the best defenders in the league. The offense, we don't talk about it. We'll see how he's able to fit in, what usage Phoenix has for him, and so on and so on. You get Jock Landale, who's playing very well. Dario Saric still working his way back. Like I definitely see your side. Like that might just be the course of action. It wouldn't surprise me if that is the course of action. I just wonder, like, how many hits can they take to that forward room in particular? Before they're like, okay, let's see if we can find, again, maybe it's a Melo, maybe it's scouring the G League and seeing, hey, is there a shooter that we're intrigued by? Maybe it is, okay, we're trading Dre. Or, hey, Jay, let's have a conversation. We need you to come back for a few games. Let's work this until we can find a partner for you. You can help get your value up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm just keeping an eye on it. But to your point, look, Phoenix is, they've handled this stuff well so far. They're humming right now.
Yeah, I think that conversation would lead to some hard times. So I don't think it'd be a long one.
Yeah, especially after we got tweets and all. Yeah, yeah. That might be too pie in the sky. That might be my me being naive coming into play. Let's stay with the West very briefly. Rudy Gobert is in health and safety protocols. He will be out for the foreseeable future for the Minnesota Timberwolves. This just kind of stinks. It's kind of where I land first. Because we haven't gotten a super large sample of Gobert in the starting unit. Because you remember, like, everyone was kind of in and out during training camp and during preseason. And so they really started getting the reps together during the regular season. And now we're like 9 or 10 games in and Gobert is out again. And I think for them to reach their ceiling, they're going to have to figure out how the Gobert Towns front court works or how that starting unit in particular works together. And this is just another blip in getting those guys consistent reps together. Like, first and foremost, I hope that's okay. But like the basketball side, yeah. That's kind of where I go.
No, yeah, that's the biggest blow. This is a time for them to try and figure out what those minutes look like, how those minutes are parsed out, what's their rotation, what can we do when it's just Rudy out there, what can we do when it's just Cat out there. ultimately, it's probably going to simplify it for them in the short term because Cat's going to be the five. Nas Reed's going to come off. Everyone else is going to play. We have seen when the subs usually come in, Rudy comes out, the tempo does pick up when Cat's at the five. That's something they know what to do with. They're just missing out on these scenarios that they kind of had to figure out. And they're, you know, they've been working to try and tweak things defensively, but they haven't quite had the success they're looking for offensively, still trying to figure out the spacing. So yeah, I think I agree with you. That's going to be the biggest loss for them if he's out for an extended period of time. But the question is going to be the question, and you know, they're going to have some time to figure it out. But I think the biggest thing is they've been aware of it. You know, they're not hiding from the fact that, hey, this isn't quite where we want it to be. And they'll keep tweaking it. Now, hopefully you find some other guys that step up, you know, make it a little bit easier for you rotation wise. But yeah, they got some work to do.
They have some work to do indeed. And going back to the East for the last injury note, before we get into some talk, Raptors forward Pascal Siakam suffered a right abductor strain during the Friday night matchup against the Dallas Mavericks. He will be reevaluated in 2 weeks. Seems like a blow to the Raptors' offense for sure in terms of the creation burden he holds. What was your initial reaction when the news dropped?
Stinks. He's been so good to start this season. So it stinks to see him on the sideline. As far as the Raptors go, I mean, just hope you can get enough Fred VanVleet. Hopefully Barnes can carry the show, but they are who they are offensively. So I would expect some Gary Trent Jr. to step up, maybe get some more usage on off ball. I think we see a heavier dose of Barnes, and I think maybe get Freddie more involved, which sounds wild to say, but lean on him. Hope your defense does the job and get Pascal back.
Yeah. Freddie did just make his return on Sunday against the Chicago Bulls, but we got a little bit more Raptors talk in the tuck on this episode. Steve, what team stood out to you the most this week?
Well, I'm stealing your bit. Let's talk about the Hawks.
Huh. I am intrigued.
Yeah, just doing you a favor. Of course you're intrigued. I've just enjoyed the process of what they've been doing. I've really liked the DeJounte Murray, Trae Young duo so far this season. They've done a good job mixing in actions that keep them both involved. You can use Trae Young off the ball. You can use DeJounte with the ball. You can use pick and roll actions, your favorite play they like to run. But there's it unlocks them offensively because you got two people who can create. You have two rollers. It's just good stuff. I think one of the cooler parts of it is they got DeJounte Murray, but they've really allowed him to be DeJounte Murray. As opposed to sometimes you get a player and, okay, we have more talent, but we need you to do X. Like, he's out there playing like he looked last year. Like, a lot of pick and roll, a lot of pull-ups, some drives, aggressive with the catch and shoot. That's still interesting to me. Like, I feel like as the season's gone on, we saw Atlanta kind of be conscious about where DeJounte was spaced to start. He was on the strong side a lot. And, you know, sometimes out of the flow, you can't control it. But something to keep an eye on there. How does the catch and shoot look? And what do they do with there? Because sometimes they'll run an action where DeJounte ends up spaced. I'm like, ooh, this would be really good if y'all just flipped it. And then they'll flip it and run it the other way around. But there's just a lot more things they can do offensively. I think DeJounte's been really good. Like, he's been aggressive. He looks like he's been playing there for years. I've liked the way that DeAndre Hunter's been involved, coming off screens every now and then, getting downhill on a pick and roll, going to get a basket. John Collins still trying to find, I think they're still trying to find more ways to keep him engaged and involved, but I've liked what he's done. Your favorite topic, I've liked the staggering from Atlanta. As far as, hey, we've got our unit that starts, we run what they have. Then we got Trey, then we got DeJounte coming, then we come back with them both. It's just a nice way to keep the flow going for them. It just, when you watch them, there's a much better understanding of who they are identity-wise. Like, it just feels like they're playing with purpose, and that's been key. I like that the bench is the bench. Hey, these are y'all's minutes. Come in here and do your job. Like, we made this point before. I think I made it on the preview pod, but sometimes that just makes things simple for a coach, makes it easier for players. Hey, Holidays, come in here and play defense. Try some closeouts. You know, make some plays, hit some shots. Okongwu, defend and roll. Jalen Johnson, let's see what you got. Simple. Y'all are playing. Do what you do. It fits is what we do. I do worry sometimes that the all trade bench lineup can lean a little too much into the Trey Young does stuff vibe when he's out there with them, but I get it. That's why he's there. That's why you give him those minutes to give him that runway. The other thing is that the defense, like the defense has not been perfect, but compared to last year, they're playing with a lot more activity and you see them attempting different things. I think the screen navigation from DeJounte Murray and DeAndre Hunter has really helped them, but we're seeing more effort for them to have team defense. We're seeing more times where they do one thing and then they still recover. Like maybe Trae Young, this man sets a screen, he switches for a second, but John Collins keeps fighting and he stays in front. Or maybe they're mixing in an under or an over. You know, we're seeing more times where they're defending later in the clock. We're seeing them able to recover and reset more than last year. You know, I think just little things like that tell me, okay, this is not only an emphasis, but this is something they're kind of bought in on. So we'll see how it continues to develop, but I like it.
There we go. To your point about the team defense, can I throw a quick number out there for you?
Nikhilidics.
We are here. It's early, so we'll see if it holds. But the Hawks defense, they're eighth in transition frequency allowed, which is a huge step because their transition defense was a bit of a mess last season. Teams got to run out often. They matched up poorly. The fact that they've dropped the frequency and they've been a lot better in terms of points allowed in transition is a huge boost for them. Just a small thing to monitor, but that's a small thing that they needed to nail. The half court, kind of anticipated it improving a little bit just by virtue of having DeJounte Murray and having a guy that can force turnovers for you, a guy that can take on some of those tougher guard assignments. So having him, having DeAndre Hunter, who is still on the court, still healthy, Clint Capella still doing what he can in a drop, like having that stability should help your half-court defense, but they had to nail the little things for me. They had to be able, just getting back and not allowing easy buckets so everything doesn't turn into a track meet, which if you have Trae Young, you have a good chance in those, but you don't want to be in that all the time. So them cleaning that up a little bit is important. I would also say just on the offense front, what excites me the most about the Hawks right now? One, you already mentioned the process, so I'm not going to rehash everything that you said, but the fact that the Trey DeJounte thing seems to be getting sorted out quicker than anticipated is exciting. And DeJounte's been incredible. Like Trey just hasn't shot well at all to start this season. So the fact that the Hawks are finding success with Trey Young shooting, cannot knock down threes. The floater isn't going for him as of yet. Like the efficiency numbers are just not there for Trey right now. And so you imagine once that perks up, this is where the process matters. This is where figuring out what the play calls are, where the guys are going to be spaced, figuring that stuff out matters now. Because then once the shots start falling for Trey, defenses are really going to be in the bind trying to figure out, okay, is this action for DeJounte? If he is, where's Trey? Is Trey lifting now? Is Trey just more willing to take catch and shoot jumpers? Is he getting easier looks? Is he getting into a rhythm easier now? And now that hurts when we go to the all Trey bench lineup. And to that point, it's Trey and bench unit without Bogdan Bogdanovic right now. And so there's still upside for this to get even better. And so it's on brand, but I am encouraged for what I've seen from Atlanta just to kick off this season. That matchup against the Raptors earlier last week, probably not their finest moment. They got kind of blitzed. But overall, like I am enjoying the process of seeing the defense tighten up, which is the first step to getting good. Like just tighten up the things you can control, get back, get matched up, communicate better. It's been a good start. So I am excited to see where they go from here.
I'll throw a curveball at you.
Okay.
Has the process made you feel better about their ceiling come playoff time? Or is this just them doing things better?
It makes me feel a little bit better about the ceiling. Because, again, this isn't a team that, like, they're not firing on all cylinders yet. Like, their best player is not firing on all cylinders yet. They're not completely healthy yet. So there's just an added dynamic that's entering the fray as well. So I would say, especially with the East kind of being where it is right now, like I could see second round or like sneaky Eastern Conference finals, like ceiling if they put it all together. And so in that regard, like, sure, like obviously there's more basketball to be played. I'm not projecting they're going to do that. But like in terms of the ceiling raising, like again, like the offense has not felt as clunky as I thought it could be to kick off the year. And I was someone that was high on the move when it was made. So again, the fact that they're starting to figure out the Trey DeJounte dynamic as quickly as they have, and they're having success despite Trey not shooting well right now. But that bodes well in my eyes. They just have to stay healthy and keep going on this path of just kind of getting things together in that regard. But I'm excited for them. How have you felt about, because you mentioned Okongwu briefly about his roles, how have you felt about his offensive usage so far this year?
I mean, he has one job right now. He does it pretty well. I think he's improved as far as getting out of his screens quicker, and he does a good job of staying in the pocket on the roll. So I've liked what I've seen. Gotcha. I think he's developing right on time in that area.
Okay. I guess that's why I wanted to ask, because he does have the role, the role as being a roller. And I wonder if you could alleviate some of the, hey, Trey's doing a ton, by giving him some more of those like elbow touches and using him more as a hub, because he does have the passing ability, I think, to do so. So I was wondering if there's room for more usage there, or if you're just fine with where he's at right now.
I'm fine. I mean, what, you want these dribble handoffs with Justin Holiday?
I mean, that's pretty solid for a bench unit. Let him play off each other. I mean, we just seen, like, obviously Okongwu is not Domantas Sabonis as a player, but like we've seen Sabonis and Holiday have chemistry. We've seen Sabonis and McDermott. Like, I think you get similar elements with the movement shooting between those two off the second unit. Again, like, he's not Sabonis level good. That's not the argument I'm making, but just in terms of usage. And again, the broader point of taking some of that burden off of Trey when he's like the lone star out there, just something to sprinkle into the half court. That's all I'm asking about. You got a thumbs down and a laugh behind a mute from Steve. I am blowing up your spot. Did you have any lasting thoughts on the Hawks, or did you have another team you want to shout out before I go?
Nope. Let it fly, man.
Okay. Well, I will do what I can. The team that impressed me the week, it's simultaneously a team that impressed and a team that makes me think, I feel like. I am going to give the Raptors some love here. A 3-1 week. They are 6-4 overall. They're 4th in offense right now. They are 6th in defense.
I cannot wait to hear where this butt comes from, folks. Give it to him, Nekias.
We will get into it. I will first begin by saying, like, this is a fun unit to watch, particularly on the defensive end. Again, like, the size and the length just stands out immediately. There aren't really easy gaps to attack with this team, and the ability to toggle between schemes just throws teams for a loop. Just even going back to the game on Sunday, typically a switch group, Toronto is. And DeMar DeRozan was basically blitzed every time he touched the ball. I think he ended up with like 9 or 10 shot attempts in the game on Sunday. And their ability to cover ground behind those traps, it's wildly impressive. And watching the trio of Scottie Barnes and the amount of positions that he can defend, watching Scottie Barnes, watching Pascal Siakam before he got hurt, fly around. Watching OG Anunoby just blow things up all over the place. OG Anunoby averaging 4.8 steals over his last 4 games. Like, steals aren't the sole mark of defense. We should all know that in 2022. But just that level of event creation is absurd to me. And then you factor in who he's been tasked with guarding and the roles that he's had to toggle between. On-ball assignments, chasing guys on screens, acting as the low man, switching out when necessary, defending big sometimes. He has been one of the best defenders in basketball. Like, when you think of who's just been elite defensively this year, the first names that come to my mind, Brooke Lopez, Anthony Davis, OG Anunoby, in whatever order you want to put them in. Like, those are the 3 that pop for me right now in terms of the effectiveness in their roles. And in the case of Anunoby particularly, the amount of roles that he's been asked to carry. It's been insane to watch those 3 play together. It's just been fun. Scottie Barnes' development, getting more on-ball reps, running more ball screens, has been interesting to me. Beyond that, his willingness to shoot has just popped. Averaged over 6 3-point attempts this past week. He's no longer afraid to take shots. He is taking them over contest now. We will see where the efficiency lands, but I think, again, going back to last year where Nick Nurse basically said, hey, we need you to shoot more. What's going on? like a light flip. Then it seems like that light has very much flipped this season to tip things off. I think the butt comes in for me is just the offense split again, because they are fourth in offense entering Monday's action, but they're 22nd in the half court. And now they are without Pascal Siakam for at least the next 2 weeks. And so I do wonder, what is their pathway to getting easier buckets in the half court? What made Pascal's season so special, like they met to the second half of last year, even the start of this one, where he's been insane. Like he's been an all NBA caliber player again, probably first or second team, depending on what you think about some of these other forwards. But what's made it special is that he still had to excel in tight quarters in the half court. And so now with him out of the equation, I'm with you. Like, I do think Scottie's going to assume more usage. Fred VanVleet just came back. He's going to assume more usage. But beyond some of the movement stuff for Gary Trent Jr., who didn't shoot well from three this past week, hasn't been a great start to the season in terms of his shooting. And beyond the inverted pick and roll with Fred VanVleet slipping out, very effective with Pascal. We'll see how it goes with Scottie and the others. Like, what is their pathway to easy buckets? Can they find that? Because that's kind of the only thing that stops me from saying, hey, this is a team that can just, they can make these the conference finals this year. Because I just don't know, the half court offense just holds me back. Like, they're still very much Pascal get it done in tight quarters. If Fred has a three ball going, then that opens some things up for you. And they still crash the heck out of the offensive glass. But I just wish they had more of a way to garner advantages.
They're going to have to create more advantages. To your question, what is their better pathway for easier offense? It's simple. Their defense. But I'm sure we'll talk about that in a second. I mean, the half-court offense has been the thing with Toronto for X amount of years. And for me, it's just the tempo's just got to raise up. It just can't be so take-turny. But just have some tempo, keep the pressure on defenses, find ways to create opportunities. It just feels like sometimes they explore every avenue of what they have with the ball. Not even in a selfish way, but okay. OG Anunoby catches it, or Scottie Barnes catches it, dribble, dribble. Okay, now I want to post up. Okay, well, that's 7 or 8 seconds that we've taken here. What option do we have next? You know, well, I think they're really good in transition. Their defense opens up a lot of transition opportunities. I just think in the half court, even when it's time to execute a set, you can look. You're starting it with 17, 16 on the clock. Okay. Primary option is done. Then what are we doing after that? So they can get more of an emphasis on just using their athleticism the same way they do defensively. I mean, because even if you're going to have a base of drive and kick, that's fine. But, you know, if it's going to be drive, explore, now I kick, now maybe we set a screen, there's just not as much rhythm or flow. They just haven't necessarily put the pressure on teams in the half court that they could with their talent base, if that makes sense. You have multiple playmakers, you have multiple people who can drive, you have screeners and rollers. It's just going to be on you to kind of get into your stuff a little bit quicker, you know? And I mean, part of it is they play random. I mean, if Scottie Barnes pushing it up, he might do 4 or 5 dribbles, but can we get to option B quicker? Can we get to some pass and cut? Can we get to a screen quicker? That's probably the biggest thing for me off the top of my head.
I got you. And like to that point about the tempo, I think that is a good one. It's made tough just because of who they have. Like to your point, they have a bunch of guys that can drive, but like Scottie Barnes is very unique in the way that he drives and generates contact. He just kind of scoots and bumps and half turn here and wait, hey, he's at the rim, but it might've taken a while for him to get there. OG Anunoby attacking tilted defenses. He is simultaneously one of the strongest players in basketball, and also just the balance is terrible. I don't know what happens with the lower body to where he can't stay upright. But like that kind of alters some things in some of the attacks. Pascal Siakam, one of the best players in basketball, one of the craftiest drivers in basketball. It's a lot of fakes and a lot of half spins and full spins and subtle crosses and hesitations. And I appreciate the craft that their drivers have, but it does take them takes them a while to get there as self-creators. Like the snappiest driver on their team might be Precious Achiuwa. And that's a problem because he doesn't pass on the drive. And also if you're using him to kick off your driving kick sequences like that, I'm all for inversion, but like that doesn't seem ideal in terms of like your long-term vision. even to the precious point, keeping an eye on the 3-point percentage because it just hasn't been there. Getting to the free throw line still. But I do wonder if teams kind of sit on that pump fake above the break, like what happens with that? Like the shot has to turn around, but we'll keep an eye on that moving forward. But I guess that's why I find myself in a weird place, because I agree, like drive and kick can very much be the foundation, and they have guys that can get downhill. Do they have the type of drive and kick options that leads to that kind of, I guess, to that kind of connectivity and that kind of tempo and that kind of flow? I think it's easy to see it when they're able to force a miss or able to force a turnover. Because to your point, the defense leads the dance for them. They are very good defensively, and they lead the NBA in transition rate and transition efficiency because of the way that they're able to get stops and get out. Precious Achiuwa gets a board, he can push it up the court. Scottie Barnes can do the same. OG Anunoby can do the same. Pascal Siakam can do the same. They have so many guys that can just kind of grab and go. They can engineer pace that way. But against set defenses, they still, like a lot of their players, still face unders. And just their styles of driving, it doesn't lead to the type of, holy crap, two people are here now. There's a swing, and now everyone's in rotation.
Oh, yeah, I understand that. But that's why you got to do whatever you're trying to do, do it quicker. So that you give yourself more room to maybe get two of those instead of one of those. Shot clock's down. Let's try something. So that's where the tempo is just going to be as important for them. Get into whatever you want too quick. Just make quicker decisions. Because to your point, they don't necessarily have everyone who's going to draw that attention. Even on the kicks, they don't have everyone that's going to draw those hard closeouts. So they have to do some work to help themselves out as far as generating that type of pressure. And so I just think if they can up the tempo, even if they continue to do what they're doing, just start it earlier, swing it a couple times. How many times have you seen Scottie and OG and Fred drive in the same possession?
Doesn't feel like very often.
I guess I'm just annoyed with the pick and roll with 12 seconds on the clock. That's probably it. Sorry, Canada.
Had to be one every show. But like beyond that, they're still making this work. This is still a very good basketball team.
Oh, yeah, the defense, man. You going to talk about the defense?
They do so much. I feel like this is like version 8 of me nerding out about the different things that they do defensively. But like the traps, the zone, the switches, the drop at the level. And like I was thinking about this a little bit earlier. Like it's one thing to have a team with scheme versatility. It's another thing to where you can toggle schemes within a possession. And then it's another thing to where you're throwing out these different looks. And now the offense is like, okay, no, not only do I not know what I'm going to see from a scheme perspective, I don't know how often they're going to do this. This may be press into a zone. Next time down may be press into just a man coverage. And then they might do that for 6 straight possessions. Then they're right back into a zone. And then they're going to trap. And then they're faking the trap, and then it's just a softy. They just do so many things. They alter the timing of it. They alter how long they want to stay in their certain defense. And that's before you even get into Fred VanVleet. He's like 5'11". That's probably generally listed. He could defend two or three positions. Scottie Barnes, he could defend at least 3 positions, 4 positions, 5 positions. He's been tossed on all 5 positions. Pascal Siakam can go up and down the positional scale. OG Anunoby also can go up and down the positional scale. So now you're throwing this scheme versatility in with this personnel that can defend everyone. You may just have a small guy start on a bid because they want to switch. And then they may go switch and double if they want to do that. Again, I referenced a little bit earlier, just the Chicago game. Just off rip. Now we're just trapping DeMar DeRozan. Have fun dealing.
Yeah, every time, buddy. Yeah, we're trapping every time you get the ball. And Vooch, you want to post up? We'll just double that too. It's fine. That was the other part I wanted to mention. They can just all of a sudden just ramp up the activity to where it's like, goodness gracious, what is happening right now? They are just flying around. It is, and just, I admire that.
It's plug and play too. Like they just got, like Christian Coloco has been starting the last 4 games, and watching him ramp up the pressure. They also had him in the drop in that Chicago game as well. 6 blocks. And most of those came in the first quarter of that game. And you saw him, like, this is one-on-one defense. It's a block. This is him in a drop rotating over and getting a block. This is him from the dropping down from the corner. That's a weak side rim protector, last line of defense, getting another block. for him to be thrown in. Like, okay, no, we need you to play 31 minutes tonight as a second round pick against Nikola Vucevic, who in theory is a guy you can use as a mid post hub, a guy you can use as a low post scoring option, a guy that you can pick and pop with. And for him to have to toggle schemes like that and handle that the way that he did, like, it's wildly impressive. It speaks to how good he is defensively. But beyond that, it speaks to the level of trust that the Raptors staff already has in him to execute these schemes. And also, this is just what Toronto does. Like, it would have been very easy to say, all right, we got a rookie big in right now because of injuries and whatnot. We're just going to go drop. We have the screen navigators to do it. We have the help side guys to do it. Let's insulate this. And it's like, no, we're going to do what we do. And we're going to throw in the most super loops. And for him to be able to execute that, and for the Raptors as a team to be able to execute the way that they do, it's wildly impressive. And again, to the general theme, they use that defense to force misses, to force turnovers, get out of transition, so they don't have to worry about their half-court issues. I think they were second. I think they had the second lowest, like, half-court frequency last year. They're first by a pretty solid margin this year. Like, they just 22nd means nothing when they're just not in the half court. And so, again, that's a tough thing to live on once you get into the postseason, which is why it goes into the team I think about, because I want to know, okay, what are the long-term steps here? Because it doesn't look one-to-one like it did last year from a scheme perspective, but, like, the general theme is we have some clunkiness in the half court. We have guys that can abuse mismatches, but not necessarily a lot of guys that can just generate advantages off rip. And so how do they make that work? Can they get enough shooting? Can they space the floor in a way that forces different rotations? And so that's where I go big picture with Toronto. It's like, okay, what does this look like in the playoffs? They need to be healthy first and foremost. But beyond that, can they be an average offense in terms of efficiency in the half court? Because if they can, then if their defense is there, like, their half court frequency is going to be low anyway, because they're forcing turnovers, they're forcing misses, and they're running. But when they get in the half court, they just need to be average. Because if they can get the average, the rest of it, I think, kind of takes care of itself. Like, we know what their formula is. We know who they have. And if that team is healthy, and if their roster is healthy, they are a dangerous, deep, long, rangy, smart, versatile group. And so I do want to see them continue to take those steps. That's why I think the on-ball reps for Scottie Barnes in particular is going to be important. Because if he's able to get to the point to where coverage has changed with him, where it isn't just an under, where he may start to draw extra attention, I think that alleviates some of the concerns that you have with Fred VanVleet in the half court. And not needing him to be the primary all the time, being able to unlock him more off the ball, not just as a guy that can set inverted screens, that's dangerous enough, but as a guy that you can legit have him coming off of the same staggers that you have Gary Trent Jr. doing all the time. Like, just opening up that usage, that's another way for you to get defenses in rotation, and that opened up some more options for him in the half court. And so just a lot to monitor, but overall, good group, well-coached group. It's a fun group, very versatile group. Having a lot of fun watching Toronto right now. And now for a...
Well, Nekias, who's making you think about having fun or not having fun?
B+. Fantastic segue. I guess I'm just keeping my eye on the Golden State Warriors. And more specifically, I'm keeping my eye on the second unit of the Golden State Warriors. Because when the starters are in, they absolutely blitz teams. Steph Curry has been incredible. Klay Thompson starting to find his form from deep. Andrew Wiggins has been good. Draymond Green, we talked about it on a recent episode, that he's a little bit more aggressive on those roles, particularly when he's screening for Steph Curry. Those openings that are going to be there, those 4-on-3 or 3-on-2 situations, nice to see him take advantage of those. Kevon Looney has just been solid, per usual. And then the bench comes in, and Jordan Clarkson not knocking down shots right now. Jonathan Kuminga,
who?
Yeah, he's just hasn't been in the rotation as of late.
You mean Jordan Poole?
Did I not say Jordan Poole?
You said Jordan Clarkson.
Ah, tough. Well, I can do. I have a Clarkson note later, so I guess I have to do that all over again. Oh, wouldn't be a podcast without one mess up for me. I'll tell you what, man.
I'm sorry. The who was too easy. Please continue.
All good. Jordan Poole, excuse me, has not been able to knock down shots. Jordan Clarkson has been able to knock down shots this year. But Poole has been able to knock down shots. It's been a very odd season for James Wiseman. Understood because of the time that he's missed and him still trying to find the rhythm and find himself. But the minutes have been uneven. Jamichael Green has very much been relied on. Sometimes the shot goes in, sometimes it doesn't. Again, Jonathan Kuminga hasn't really been in the rotation. Hasn't gotten to play the four as much because they are committed. They're committing time at the five for James Wiseman. You're putting Jamichael Green alongside him. So that opens up the Kuminga minutes to steal your line. But the decision-making, the shooting, not quite where you want it to be. And then defensively, when that second unit is in, it's just not good. It's just not good right now. Like Wiseman trying to navigate a drop and just navigating his contest in particular, it's been very spotty. Jordan Clarkson, some did it again. Jordan Poole with some of his lapses off the ball. The screen navigation isn't necessarily great with him either. James Jonathan Kuminga, he's just kind of been a mess off the ball to start the season, which goes into why he hasn't been a consistent rotation player. At this point of the season, it's just making me like, because you know what my view is on playing the young teams on the, you're playing the young guys on established teams. Like I know this Warriors team is good. When they're healthy. I know
talk
they're good.
About it.
The starting lineup has been tremendous. Again, they've been great. And so for me, it's like, okay, I'm banked in. I know this team is good. We need to give these young guys the runway. But now it's just like, I still believe that, but it also feels like I don't know if the Warriors can afford to do that to the degree that I would like, just because of how those young guys are playing. And beyond that, like, they don't have a ton of vets on this bench either.
Let's talk about it.
It's just been a rough going. It's been a rough going. This is a Steve victory lap section.
Let's do some thinking. No victory lap. I will circle back to that point, though, to get your thoughts on how you feel about it. But let's go big picture with this Warriors team. One, I think they're good. They're the Warriors still, to me. 3-7 start, not ideal, especially in this Western Conference. I think this is something we talked about concern-wise going into the season. It was just trying, how do they navigate the regular season? Everyone's chasing you. And you need some of these components to hit. They lost a lot of those pieces they could rely on night in and night out to get through the regular season. And there was a time in the league where you know, if you had an established ceiling, you could kind of figure the regular season out and do what you do in the playoffs. I don't think you can do that anymore. I think this league is too hungry. The plan exists. Like we saw it with the Nets. We saw it with the Lakers. You might have something you can do to that gets you to the table or wins you games then. But it won't matter if you don't have the matchup you need and you're facing a really good team in the first round, you go home. So to your point, the defense really hasn't been there. And it's felt weird. Like the rotations just haven't felt very Golden State-esque for me. This feels like the most they've been reacting defensively rather than anticipating. Like it feels like dribble penetration is an issue. Like just really, really slight breakdowns. I mean, but you look at it like, I think everyone and their mother has scored 100 on them. The Hornets dropped 120, the Pistons dropped 128, Heat dropped 116, Magic dropped 130. None of these are juggernauts. So that's where, you know, it's one of those slight tricks where, hey, when we start defending, this looks a lot better. To your point about the bench and the young guys, they feel caught to me to a degree. Because they have a championship template. They have young guys that they have brought along that can contribute. We've seen them contribute. This specific roster needs their young guys to contribute at a high level consistently. There aren't as many obstacles playing time-wise for them, but there aren't as many options. So the Warriors can't afford the uneven play. And you can feel it. It's something I felt like the last 3-4 games. Warriors starting lineup delivers a blow. You start to see the subs come in. It's like, what's this going to look like? And for me, I remember I go back to the Miami game. It was just like little things, like just a little tiny defensive breakdown for Moses Moody. And then a turnover. And then James Wiseman's in a deep drop. And then maybe he fouls. And maybe they don't execute a play. Those add up quick for this team. Like maybe before, we could have one of y'all doing those, you know? But those errors are just tough for them to really navigate and recover from. And a forward. And so I was concerned with like the up and down minutes for the young guys because, okay, the pathway's there. Why are we not doing this? But the more you watch them, this team, it's a tricky spot. Like they're in a position where they, A, need these guys to get better. B, can't afford them to for them to not be better. And C, they have to win. And secretly, they have to keep everyone healthy for the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's some stuff to navigate. The math gets a little tricky. Like, it's clear they are searching, and their margin for error is small when it comes to that second unit. And for all the talent of the younger folks, I'd ask this real quick. What's the one thing that they bring to the table every night?
Well, I guess there is a thing for Wiseman. It would be the roles. And I think the off-ball movement for Moody in particular. And overall, I think Moody's been fine defensively. Like, he's had some off-ball stuff too. Like, overall, things have been fine. I think the understanding of spacing and the off-ball movement for Moody is the thing that he brings consistently. And I think the roles and the vertical presence that Wiseman brings, I think that's there. For Kuminga, like, I think he's the one that hasn't brought a thing consistently. And, like, part of that is just on him. He has to play better. The other part of it is I think the Warriors want him to be capable of playing the three at a high level. And I think he has the tools to eventually get there. But, like, in terms of best utilization for him right now, today, November 7th, it's at the four or the five for him. And the fact that he can't log minutes there consistently, I think, is an issue in terms of his consistency right now. So I think of the three, he's the one that hasn't brought a thing every night.
The only thing I had written down was Wiseman's roles. Not that they can't do anything else.
Yeah.
Not that this doesn't speak to their potential or what they can do on the floor, but night in, night out, what can I count on you to do? And then we live with the rest. The only thing I have down is James Wiseman rolling. That's the issue.
That's
for them and for Golden State overall. You need to have the one thing that we know you can do. We can anchor that around, expect that, and then live with what everything else happens. And that's a lesson for young players. Have one thing you bring to the table every single day. Let the rest grow. It will, but you need to have that one thing that gets you in the door. Bench-wise, Dante DiVincenzo is already hurt. We talked about it. Jermichael Green has to hit. And I don't know which card he's been throwing out there every night. And that's not a shot at Jermichael Green. But you go back to Nemanja, you knew the threat of the shot was there. You knew the limitations. But hey, I can make these shots and you can put me in a bunch of actions. Jermichael Green can shoot. I don't know if teams are just going to be like, we have to stop you from shooting.
Another week in Jermichael
Green. Yeah, Jermichael Green can switch. I don't know if teams are going to say, hey, let's not attack him. So it's like, okay, those are your minutes at the four. Kind of messes up your balance and options. And then the other thing is those small lineups, man. Yeah, talk about it. Having to throw those out against Orlando and Miami early in the season?
Yeah.
Not ideal. Mm-hmm. And it's part of the concerns you had with them last year that I shoot away. But the defense is it's interesting with those lineups. Because teams are just saying, hey, Draymond, go far away. you either go far away or you come in this action so we can put two on the ball for at least a split second because y'all ain't right. So we'll see how we go with that way. Like, do they have the versatility with those? Can anyone else craft the small lineups? Like, I am watching it. But yeah, I think they're caught. I think they're going to be fine. They just need to find who they want. And this is where you miss the Lees and the GP2s of the world that I know we're getting from these 15 minutes.
Yeah, and just to bounce off the small lineup point very briefly, they've already played 47 minutes together, a 122.6 defensive rating in those minutes. That's not what you want, to say the least. I will say that they have not shot well from three in those minutes. They are only knocking out 28% of their threes. That's going to perk up, and I think once that perks up, that will make that lineup positive as the sample grows. But it's worth noting, like, the defense – like we talked about a little bit during the Denver series. And I brought it up on the preview pod, like in regards to that lineup, like how often will we see it? Because we know that can be the end game lineup for them. We know how dangerous it can be. How often do they plan on going to it during this 82-game marathon? And to your point, the fact they're having to break this out on this East Coast trip, that's not where you want to be. That's not where you want to be. And so, like, I mostly land with you. Like, I think they're going to be okay. And I think as the vets on the roster, like Dante DiVincenzo in particular, like, as they get healthy, or just as the young guys start to find their footing, it's very early in the season. Like, we're going to see a good stretch from Moses Moody. We're going to see a good stretch from Jonathan Kuminga. The challenge is going to be turning good stretches into they are good, they are productive off the bench. But, like, it's going to perk up, so I'm not pressing the big red button on the Warriors. I'm keeping an eye on it, though. Like, I do think it's worth monitoring what's happening with their second unit and with their young guys and what the development pathway is looking like there. So just wanted to revisit that pretty briefly. Did you have teams making you think this week?
Trying to avoid my victory lap. I see what you're doing. The Sacramento Kings.
Huh. Small for the Kings.
This team is competing. What, 2-point loss to the Clippers, 5-point loss to Golden State, 3-point loss to Miami. They were down 18 to the Magic on Saturday and end up winning. They won 3 of their last 4. What does any of this mean?
Welcome to the Sacramento Kings.
I'm mainly asking this because I am considering falling for the pump fake here, because I am starting to enjoy what they are doing offensively. Like, they have an identity of movement in the half court that's been fun to watch for me. I was worried about the Sabonis usage, but it feels like they seem to understand how to use him as a hub, and that's helping connect things. So if they don't have anything, they go right into that. They keep playing. They keep moving. They keep cutting. Really like the elbow action. Love the combined actions and the sets they run. I love the movement from Keegan Murray. Let's not forget about what Kevin Huerter is doing. And you're seeing De'Aaron Fox operate in multiple different ways. It's where you've seen him cut and curl and getting passes from Sabonis. You're just seeing different things that put pressure on the teams. It's not just, hey, pick and roll. Defensively, I do not know if they have the base they want, but it does appear that it's more of, hey, you scored on us than we gave up everything. And that's a step in the right direction. There's more activity. There's at least an attempt to help. They still have breakdowns, but you can see the why, which is a lot different than what we'd seen before, where it was like, what's happening here? Is there a ceiling here? Should I be falling for this pump fake? Am I just being blinded by the dribble handoffs? Like, is there something here, or am I just enjoying passing and Keegan Murray and De'Aaron Fox playing well and Kevin Huerter hooping?
To the Huerter point, 51.6% from three on nearly 8 attempts. It's actually an insane run that he's on right now. To your question, I don't know if I'm ready to pop a glass of Martinelli's yet for the play-in appearance for the Kings. I will let the sample grow. To your point, I'm glad that you noted that even with some of the recent losses that they've had, they've been close. They've been competitive. They are not getting the doors blown off of them, which is a genuine positive. I do think some of your excitement about the offense is a counterweight to how frustrated you were after the first week of the Sabonis trade, because your eyes lit up that first game or first couple of games. Like, oh, snap, I see the vision here. It's going to be cool. It's going to be Fox and Sabonis working together. They're going to be flying off of handoffs, flying off of cuts. It's all going to flow. It's going to be great. We'll figure out defense later. Fun. And then they just stop doing that stuff. So I think that since you've seen an extended stretch of them doing the thing on the offense, it's like, hey, they might have it. This might be it.
You got me overcorrecting. I'm traumatized.
It's like, hey, man. This... oh, goodness. Hey, this is the one. This is the one. He's got to hope it's not Charlie Brown with the football. But no, I do see the steps that are being taken. I will say, like, very much concerning, as much as I have enjoyed watching Orlando this year, and as fun as the game was over the weekend, and Bol and Paolo doing the thing, and Wendell doing good things, and et cetera, et cetera. It's concerning that they were down that much. It's also encouraging that they saw that deficit. It was like, nah, we're just going to play better in the third quarter. And the Magic just could not. I mean, yeah, the Magic just could not score anymore in that third quarter. It tightened up, made a run, made big shots. And that was, you know, the resilience is important. And so even to the general point, again, they're not getting blown out. But also, like, the fact that they saw that kind of deficit and fall instead of, well, we don't have it, we're on the road, home team's making big shots, let's pack it up, we get back to Sacramento. that's a good step. That speaks to the kind of culture and competitiveness that Mike Brown is helping to instill. And I think the big point for optimism is just how well De'Aaron Fox has played this year. Like, I am enjoying him continuing to find comfort offensively. I can push the turbo button. I'm not going to press it right now. I can get to the pull-up. I'm not going to get to it right now. I'm going to probe and see what opens up. When he is working off of Sabonis, like, that chemistry is starting to grow. I have enjoyed the compete level with De'Aaron Fox defensively. It has not been perfect, but it's there. And that's all I've been asking for. It's very similar to the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander point and similar to the Donovan Mitchell point. Try. And so I've enjoyed that portion. And if he keeps that up, man, like, geez, like, I'm not expecting 40-foot dagger pull-ups like he did against Orlando. But, like, the command that he has on the offense right now, I think it's worth noting. He has been really good this year. And so as long as he can drive the ship and you have Sabonis being used correctly, to your point and slash earlier frustration post-trade, that gives you a foundation. And as questionable as the defensive personnel is still overall, like, if you're making shots, that allows you to get set. And that gives you something to work with. And if you have that collective buy-in, like, it gives you something to aim for. Like, it sounds wild to be like, hey, just don't give up 115. But, like, even if you set that as a benchmark for you, because you trust that your offense can score, that De'Aaron Fox can get busy off the bounce, that Domantas Sabonis can pry guys open with his screens or his handoffs, or he can get busy on the block. Keegan Murray can fill the gaps. Kevin Herter is going to bomb away from three. And on, Malik Monk will give us a spark. Terrence Davis may give us a spark. Like, that gives you a formula. And I think for Sacramento, like, it's low-hanging fruit. Like, this isn't a championship-level bar, but, like, give a team that's trying a formula, it gives us something to focus in on. And if you can hit that enough, like, I can see why one would be optimistic with how they're playing right now. So I don't begrudge you for that at all. And so to that, like, I would like to see it continue. I, too, am still trying to figure out what it means in the grand scheme right now. But it's encouraging stuff.
I'll take it. You know, it's important to have a accountability checks. Just make sure you check in every now and then.
Oh, I feel that. Do you have any other teams for us?
The Bulls.
The Chicago Bulls. Get well soon, Andre Drummond.
I'm also trying to get a temperature check on where I'm at with them. Mm-hmm. I like a lot of what they are trying.
I can feel the confusion.
The assist numbers just feel low to me. Still feels like a lot of DeMar. It feels like they have a mix that could be annoying in the playoffs. Can they get through the regular season and win enough to make it work? Like, they feel like a team that needs a certain finish higher in the standings to have the best shot. And, like, I'm caught with, hey, I like the flow they have, but also things kind of bog down. They kind of need the pace and the tempo to maximize their offense. But what does that do to their defense? How many opportunities are you giving other teams if you're going quick? I'm just trying to figure out if there's a happy medium for them, because I feel like they've made the steps you need to make. But you look up and they're still, lost to Cleveland, lost to Philly, lost at Boston, lost at Toronto, which was kind of the thing last year. They were good, but these teams we just can't seem to beat. Am I off?
No, I feel that. And I think what further complicates this is that we just don't have a handle on when Zach LaVine is going to play on any given night. And so even the questions that you may have with, okay, what is the offensive flow? What's the ideal tempo for this team? What is the ideal hierarchy? How do we use these three together? How do we use some of these young players to bounce off of them? Where does, going back to an earlier conversation we had, like, okay, how do we get Patrick Williams reps? How does he bounce off of these guys? What are Steph Curry and Dosunmu? Where does Kobe White fit in? It's all complicated because their roles fluctuate, because Zach LaVine also is just in and out because of the knee maintenance. And so I'm not sure where to go with that. And then ultimately, there are still enough question marks defensively to where I don't feel super comfortable with them against some of the elites in the East or some of just the firm good playoff teams in the East. And like, I don't want to be unfair to them because, again, they're very much not healthy. Like, going back to the game on Sunday, like, I think with all the size and length that Toronto throws out and the way they want to crash the glass and the way they leaned into that more in light of no Pascal Siakam on Sunday, it would have helped to have a guy like Andre Drummond to get some guys off you and get some, either prevent Toronto from getting extra possessions or to get you some extra possessions yourself. And to have another screener that can help stabilize the second unit. So if you don't have Zach LaVine, you don't just get killed in the non-DeMar minutes. On top of DeMar just getting trapped every time he fell. So, like, they have a lot working against them, which kind of feeds into your point on trying to figure out, like, where they're at. I guess, like, I'm also in a weird place with them. This is a good call on your part. I just don't even know. I can't even really make a declaration on them just because they have so many moving pieces right now and moving parts right now. I do think the tempo question is an interesting one, though. Like, how fast do they want to play? Like, for me, it starts with how fast can they play when you look at their starters versus their second unit or more their hybrid units that want to push more often. But beyond that, like, I do think it's worth investigating, okay, what is the ideal tempo considering what they may be giving up on the other end? It's a talented group. It's also a weird group, and it's also a group that just isn't healthy right now. So that's just a team you have to keep tabs on moving forward. Did you have more thoughts or another team that you wanted to shout here?
Nope, those are all the teams that made me think.
Well, in that case, we can get into some players that impress. Steve, who's on your list this week?
Jalen Suggs.
Hello.
I just wanted to salute him and that dog that he displayed in the Magic's win over Golden State. That defense was hounding. He made some big shots. I do think this is a nice size runway for him to kind of grow with what Orlando's current state is. Obviously, the shot is going to be a big determining factor, but if he can get more of a chance to handle the ball, make some more reads, feel more confident in the time he has, I think we'll see some growth there. Bruce Brown. Mm-hmm. We need to give it up for Bruce Brown. I am enjoying the different ways that he's being used in Denver. Each year he keeps adding and unlocking, and his overall growth in his career is wild, but in Denver, it's just fully unlocked. Go listen to the preview pod. Shout out to me. But, you know, he's a full-on playmaker. Like, just coming off handoffs, operating in pick and roll, driving kick, spacing, letting it fly. Him screening and slipping for Jokic is extremely my jam.
Thank
and I would
you
like
for
to see
it. Yes.
More of that. But he's doing all of it. And also, he can just shoot now. Like, he's just 42% for three on 3.7 attempts. Like, no, that's my thing. Like, I can do that. Please respect me. Mm-hmm. PJ Washington. The results have been uneven, but it's been fun watching him just do stuff. It seems like Steve Clifford believes in him, maybe by default at this point, considering the injuries they've gone through. But we're seeing him more engaged. We're seeing him get downhill. We're seeing him more aggressive, making quicker decisions. Like, that's the type of growth you want to see from a young player in that spot. And these are really good reps for him. So I want to salute him. Kevin Durant. So lost in all of the things.
Yeah.
This man's having a hell of a year.
It just won. He's the conference player of the week.
Yeah, man. Like 25 or more in all 10 games this season. He's third in the league in points, eighth in blocks, 52% from the field, 94% from the line. Just imagine if he was hitting threes. He's at 52% from the field, and he's at 33% from three. Just imagine. 54% on pull-up twos. And he's shooting 8.7 a game. Come on.
It's insane.
It's been gross.
While being guarded by all five players per Kevin Durant. Yeah.
Oh, and then CJ McCollum. Mm-hmm. I just don't think he gets enough respect for what he does. Like, the bucket getting and the type of bucket getting that he produces deserves more of a salute. And the assists are up. Like, just, he makes it look easy, and it's not easy every night. And I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Steve Adams. I have no numbers, but this whole him being beloved in Memphis is just hilarious considering what they thought of him prior to him coming to Memphis.
Yeah.
If you'd said the word Steven Adams a few years ago, it might have been, you know. But he's funny, man. The man just rebounds and screens and rolls and dribble handoffs and defends, and that's it. But it's also good for him after that playoff run where it was like, not so great. Mm-hmm. For him to bounce back, I think it's been good for him.
Okay, good shouts. Did you have anyone else, or was Steven Adams the end of the list?
Steven Adams is the end of my list. Let's get your 13 going. Let's go.
13. I have limited my list this week. Thank you. Anyway, I want to give a quick shout out to Paul George. We had a segment about what's going on with the Clippers, what's happening with the offense. Mentioned that PG was just coming off an injury, but he hadn't really shot that well. That might just be over with. 32 points, 6 boards, 6 assists, 2 steals, 45% for 3 on nearly 10 attempts over the past week of games. I think he's starting to find his rhythm. Mike Conley, the steady hand and the multi-hand floaters of Mr. Conley, shooting well from 3, commandeering the ship, playmaking, not turning the ball over, just usual Mike Conley things. I would like to, since we're on the screening kick, I want to give a quick shout out to Dwight Powell, who has done a masterful job of prying both Luka Doncic and Spencer Dinwiddie open in ball screens. Also just doing his job, man. Beyond the screening, doing the rolling, whatever scheme they have, Dallas has him in, if he has to switch sometimes, if he's at the level, if he's just in a pure drop, like he's just being solid, not letting teams shake free, not allowing other breakdowns on the back end. He's just been firm. Played 45 minutes last week. The Mavericks won those minutes by 33 points. Like that's what you want from a role player. Just want to give him a quick shine. Some weirdness still happening in Miami. Going to give it a few more games before they become another team that makes me think. So we'll see how this week goes. But want to give a quick shout to Max Strus. Lit the Nets on fire over the past week. Averaged 17 points. Shot 41% from 3 on 7 attempts. A lot of those were deep. A lot of those were contested. He's just rolling, still competing on defense. Nice to see that the breakout last season was not a fluke. He's still playing well. Career highs in points, career highs in minutes. He's doing the thing. Going back to Brooklyn, Utah Watanabe. He's had quite the opportunity in light of Wave's arms wildly, and he's delivered. He's knocked down shots. He's defended well. He's filled the gaps in the way that he needed him to. Now teams have also tried to attack him. I go back to the Mavericks game that we watched. And so, again, he did his best. Didn't always go great, but he has made the best of his situation, so I think he deserves a shout. Last guy that I have on my list is Russell Westbrook, who has come off the bench in each of the last 5 games, averaging 19 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds. He is shooting 45% from 3. On a little over 4 attempts. Also shooting 75% from the free throw line, which is kind of big considering where it went last year. Not just with the misses, but with the type of misses. But beyond the numbers, he's having fun again. He's having fun. Like, even going back through the game on Sunday that the Lakers played, came out, shot out of a cannon against Cleveland on Sunday. 12 points in the first quarter, didn't miss. But it's just leading a transition opportunity, getting a put back, doing the two low, head back to the sideline. Gets an and one, he's shimmying as he hits the floor. And it's just like little stuff like that. He's yelling after made baskets or assists. Just like he's back to being bouncy Russ, fun Russ, energetic Russ, shot in the arm Russ. And that's all you can ask for. Like, he's come off the bench. He is, to this point, he's embraced the bench role. He has produced very well coming off the bench. We will see if that holds. We'll see if the shooting holds. But if he can just maintain this just vibe around him, I'd be a lot happier because he seems to really be enjoying himself. And that's a good thing to see. That concludes my list of players that impressed me. If we want to go the other way, I will stay with the Lakers and I will start with LeBron James.
Ooh. All right, that is Nekias Duncan. Nekias. Go ahead and just turn this off real quick. Thanks for listening to another episode of the.
Steve, turn off the mic. I will just say, like, LeBron has been doing this for a very, 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 very long time, and he is arguably the greatest basketball player ever because of how well he's played over the course of 20 years. It's insane. I think it's worth noting the shot selection right now. The drives are down. The drive efficiency is down. The threes and the jumper frequency is way up, and those jumpers are not falling. The defense has not been great to start the year. I just want to monitor how LeBron's doing and how LeBron's feeling. He's dealt with some foot stuff, dealt with some sickness, so we'll see how he plays as he feels better. Obviously, this is not the ideal context for him in terms of the spacing. Like, the fact that Russell Westbrook is coming off the bench kind of speaks to what the situation has been. And that's, again, with the context that Russ is playing well coming off the bench right now. But the fact that that move had to be made kind of signifies where the half-court offense was with the Lakers in that starting group. And they are still trying to find it. Like, Matt Ryan being the best shooter on the team and being relied on this early in light of some of the other deficiencies in this game, like, it kind of speaks to where they're at. And so all of this affects LeBron, but I also just want to see, like, hey, what is the burst looking like? How willing of a driver is he right now? Like, how much of it is bad spacing and how much of it is he stopped blowing by people anymore? Not that that should be, again, that probably shouldn't be the expectation at this point. He's been in the league 20 years, so not slander, but it is worth noting that this looks like a different LeBron right now. And then the other guy that I had on my, oh, did you have LeBron thoughts before I moved? I would assume.
No, no, I just think he's running HB dive right now. Just turn it on when he needs to against certain matchups, specific folks. I'm going to hit the turbo button, but I'm going to try and protect, not take as many bumps and lumps early in the season. And I think he's just trying to manage it. You can always see when he gets engaged. He is still going full force, but otherwise, hey, I'm shoot a couple threes.
Get a couple. Hey, man, it's been a all I'm saying is that it's been a lot of threes. It has been a lot of threes for LeBron right now.
Do you have the analytic on what happens when he looks at his hand?
I don't have that. I don't have that available. I'll try to look that up before Thursday show. We'll try to open that one up. Open up with that stat. But yeah, so again, just kind of keeping an eye on the process. Like, LeBron pacing himself early in seasons isn't a new development. It does feel like there's more pacing involved. Like, I even go back to the game against the Pelicans, and we were having a watch party about it. And I'm just like, hey, he's got the Zion matchup. This is someone that he can, like, Zion's not a great defender in space. And it was jumper after jumper after jumper. I'm just like, okay, but you will attack Larry Nance Jr. Like, that's, but you know, we
yeah, man, I've been in bed for the last 3 days. I'm not trying to get hit by that man. You see how big that is? Oh, it is November.
I feel you. I'm just keeping an eye on it. The second guy that I had on my list, this is what I want to bring up on last episode of the show. I was just a bozo and forgot, to be completely frank, peel the curtain back. Another player that I had by was Isaiah Jackson in Indiana. And like, it's more of a broader thing about what Indiana wants to accomplish defensively, because I think they're still very much trying to sort that out, and their defensive personnel overall is not great. But I do think this is a team that wants to go multiple, and Isaiah Jackson and the athleticism that he has, like, it in theory allows you to do that. He has the mobility to switch. He has the mobility to play at the level or just flat out hedge or trap. But like, he is still not very good at navigating space and knowing when to creep up. Like, watching him in a drop and watching him lean pretty much hunch over the lunge at ball handlers before getting back, and now guys are rolling behind him. It's just like, brother, we got to get this together. This is year two for him, so like, not super alarmed, but I am kind of monitoring what his progress looks like in that regard and how he's able to navigate space, specifically when he's in a drop, if he can get that. Because if he can get the timing and figure out where he's supposed to be, how far back he needs to be, again, he has the vertical pop to disrupt lobs or pass to the big. And if it turns into a late switch, he has the mobility to deal with guards in space. And so the potential is very much there. I just kind of want to see how it progresses moving forward. That concludes my list. Did you have anyone?
Nope.
All righty then. We can get into free throws. Do you have free throws then?
Do you have free throws?
I do have free throws.
Okay. All right. I got some. Who are you pressing the big red button on?
I don't know if I'm pressing the big red button on anyone yet.
Okay.
Nobody.
Just want to get a temperature check there. How do you think the Lakers front office really feels about Russell Westbrook playing well off the bench?
Probably like a very quiet Tiger Woods fist pump.
So it's a good for him.
Yep. From them, probably like, hey, man, this might make it a little bit easier.
Who has better vibes, the Cavs or the Grizzlies?
Ooh. I think it still has to be the Grizzlies. But like, the Cavs are up there. They're so good. They're so good.
The vibes seem to be immaculate over there.
Yes.
Did Spencer Dinwiddie calling out Tony Brothers put a dent in the respect the game movement?
I think so, because I feel like that's very much the opposite of respecting the game. Like, you just can't do that. You can't say that. No one should be saying that to someone else on a basketball court. And like, I want to know, what is the context for a ref to say that? Now, forget Tony Brothers and Spencer Dinwiddie specifically. What would have to happen on the court for that to be communicated by a ref, period?
One, that's pretty light for a basketball court, honestly.
I mean, probably, yeah. But like,
you're going to get that back running back. I mean, yeah. But I mean, I can imagine a scenario where maybe he's arguing a call, walks away, his teammate tries to back him up, and you just say, nah, man, bleep that, bleep, bleep, bleep.
Bleep that. Bleep.
How it went. Clean rating, man. Come on.
Oh, God. That's amazing.
So is this Rick Carlisle saying my bad for last year? Yep.
I'm not touching. That's nope? A tremendous question. Okay.
All right, my bad. Sorry. Are John Wall and Reggie Jackson the most in each other's way backcourt in the league right now?
let me make sure I'm not forgetting anyone. My immediate reaction is yes. My immediate reaction is I think I'm going to say yes.
That's safe. Yeah, I think power rank these. Do you think so? Power rank these coach of the year candidates.
Okay, let me get the old notes app up. What we got?
There's five for you. Mike Budenholzer.
Okay.
JB Bickerstaff.
Uh-huh.
Will Hardy.
Ooh. Okay.
Chauncey Billups.
Okay.
Monty Williams.
Huh. Okay. Oh, that's a good one. Oh man. Okay. So. I think I go Will, JB, Bud, Chauncey, and Monty.
Is that 1 to 5?
Yes.
Okay. I like it. We're bringing it back, by the way, folks. I got some player comparisons for you.
Ah.
I'll name this segment later.
Okay.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or Ja Morant?
Ah, I see. I am going to say Ja for now.
Okay. Alperen Sengun or Steven Adams?
Steven Adams.
Paul George or Tyrese Maxey? Oh, God. Paul George or Tyrese Maxey?
Paul George.
Keldon Johnson or Anthony Edwards?
Ha ha ha. I'll take Keldon right now.
Oh wow. Okay. We'll circle back to that. Jalen Green or Gary Trent Jr.?
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, buddy. He's been stored up for about 3 weeks.
Yes. I see that. Because defense is so... I'll say Gary for now.
Jalen Brunson or Drew Holiday?
Drew Holiday.
Kyle Kuzma or Michael Porter Jr.?
Oh, that's a good one. Very quietly, MPJ starting to, not a good defender, but he's starting to do some things. We'll go Kuz.
Okay. Christian Wood or Nikola Vucevic?
This is slanderous. I don't think it's slanderous, but I'll go Christian Wood right now.
Kelly Oubre or Spencer Dinwiddie?
This feels like a setup. I'm going to go Oubre right now.
Evan Mobley or DeAndre Ayton?
Mobley.
Lonnie Walker or Caris LeVert?
Caris.
Trey Mann or Trey Jones?
Wow. You have had these stored up for a minute. Good Lord. Trey Jones.
Trying to get these in for weeks. Ayo Dosunmu or Kyle Lowry?
Wow. I'd certainly rather have Ayo long term.
This man trying to soften the blow.
We gotta get the Ayo's been better this year. I'll go Ayo.
Kevin Love or Bobo?
Okay, so it's Kevin Love, but let me just say the fact that Ball has legit been a productive NBA player this year is all the vindication that I need. Top five in blocks, up there in true shooting percentage. He's shooting 70%+ on twos right now. He just dropped 20+ on Saturday. Like, hey, he's doing the thing. Shout out Kevin Love, though. He's good.
Nick Claxton or Jock Landale?
The answer is yes, but I will go with Nick Claxton for now.
Anthony Davis or Lauri Markkanen?
It's still Anthony Davis. Like, I feel like because of how bad the Lakers are overall, and don't let Anthony Davis's jumper distract you from what he's doing on defense.
Okay. How do you feel about Anthony Edwards being a decoy?
I think it's funny when he does not sell it at all. Those are my thoughts on that. What a time.
How much Tracy McGrady do you see in Jeremy Grant?
You are the worst person I know. They are they are slash were both black basketball players. Beyond that, what was the line from what was the line from Charles Barkley? Two tall black dudes. That's all I got.
Move to the, you know what? Let me not even do my last one. Go ahead. What you got?
No, what was your last one?
Jonathan Isaac says he's back to playing 5-on-5. Do you think he's finally getting right?
Finally. All right. So entering Monday, there were three teams that ranked in the top five in rim rate allowed and corner three rate allowed. Can you name three teams?
Rim rate allowed and corner three allowed?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man. Totally got this.
Okay.
Let's go with, is Golden State one of them?
No, not at all.
Yikes. Lakers?
Also no. These are good defensive Rockets. Stats, to be clear. Absolutely not.
I thought you meant the other way around.
No, no. Rim rate allowed. They are allowing the fewest. The lower number.
Bucks?
Yeah. Okay, yes.
Bucks are definitely up there. Okay. I'm going to say Phoenix?
No.
No. Excuse me. Boston?
Boston, yes.
So there's a third. One more that I need. Mm-hmm. Let's see what we got. That's a tough one. Raptors?
No, they bleed corner threes.
No. Well, you can put some extra paprika on it, all right? Who's number three then, buddy?
Your Washington Wizards.
Oh, dang.
Okay. Well, as a follow-up question, have you been called for the foul yet?
No.
Okay.
I just flew by. I flew by and got back on defense.
Ah, I see. I see. Who do you trust more to find the open man, Marcus Morris or Malik Willis?
Marcus Morris.
Wow, tough. Who is the worst center that you would take over Bol Bol right now?
The worst center I would take over Bol Bol?
Yes.
Oh, geez Louise. I don't like that last question. I started Malik Willis in fantasy. He scored 1 point. I don't want to talk about that, man.
I am sorry to hear that.
It's all right. It was Mahomes bye week.
Ah.
We move. Let's see. Let's see. The worst center I would take over Bol Bol?
Yes.
I mean, give me Udonis.
Okay. That's amazing. That's peak hate. Anyway, we're gonna run a variation of this question back. Rank these skip passers. Trae Young, Luka Doncic, James Harden.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Luka, Trae, James.
Okay. Better Jordan, Poole or Clarkson?
Poole.
Okay. Do you think they tested Rudy because of symptoms or the 3 that he took?
Oh, it's definitely the 3.
All right. That's all I had. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. We are hosting watch parties for basketball games and a little bit of everything, to be completely honest with you. So join the Dunker Spot community. Also, watch some games with us with watch playback. Have some fun with us. A lot of analysis, a lot of banter, also some foolishness, some bad food takes, other things, dairy products. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.